And welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. At Cure's second annual Ovarian Cancer Heroes Gala, we had the chance to sit down with the most decorated gymnast in American history, Shannon Miller, before she spoke at the event. Shannon, who has 7 Olympic medals and has been inducted into the U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame twice, was diagnosed with a rare form of ovarian cancer in 2011. After surgery and an aggressive chemotherapy regimen, Shannon is now cancer-free and continues to be a strong advocate for awareness and early detection of ovarian cancer.
So you're here to help honor this year's Ovarian Cancer Heroes, but what are some of the themes you'll be stressing in your keynote address tonight?
Well, I'm so honored. I'm so excited to be here. We have these incredible heroes tonight that we're celebrating and honoring, and I'm excited to be a part of that. I think tonight what I really want to talk about is really understanding the importance of caregivers, not just the medical staff, physicians and nurses and nurse navigators. They all do such amazing things. But we also can't forget about our family and friends and neighbors and people that pitch in to help out at every turn. And whether that's bringing over a meal so that, you don't have to cook or smell things, watching children so that, the woman going through it can just get some rest, or just offering a supportive word, holding a hand. Those are things that are so meaningful. And so what I really want to put forth tonight is the importance that what they do matters every single day.
That's great. So now, do you have a message you'd like to send the heroes who are being honored, or even any woman who's been diagnosed with ovarian cancer?
I guess the message I want to send all of our heroes, and really every caregiver out there, everyone that steps in to help out, whether they're medical or any other type of caregiver, I think the importance of what they do matters. Nothing is too big or too small. Every little bit helps. Even just sitting and listening is so important. And for the women that have heard that diagnosis, that are going through an ovarian cancer diagnosis right now, I think we all have a different journey. We're all at different places in that journey. But I think the one thing that we all have to do is just keep fighting. We just keep fighting every day. There are new breakthroughs all the time in the medical world. There's new ways to treat. There's new programs available for quality of life during and after treatment as well. So I would just say keep fighting.
So now let's talk a little bit about your personal experience. How was your ovarian cancer found? Were you experiencing any symptoms or?
My diagnosis was really kind of out of the blue, as far as what I would say. I did not, and I would tell you at the time, I didn't have any symptoms. What I would come to find out later was that I was having 3 of the primary ovarian cancer symptoms, but I didn't know that they were anything important to worry about. When you think about things like bloating and stomach pains, women have those pretty much every month. And so you don't think a lot about that. I lost probably 6 pounds in a month, but I had just finished nursing my son. I thought I was losing baby weight. I did not associate that with something negative. So for me, it was late in 2010 when I went to a regular doctor's appointment, one that I will admit that I actually called up to cancel because I was really busy. I was overwhelmed at work. I thought I could push it off. And then as I was waiting on hold for the receptionist, I thought better of it. I just felt that guilt because here I was an advocate for women's health and I was not walking the walk. So I took the appointment, and it was at that appointment in about 15 minutes, I found out that I had a baseball-sized cyst on my left ovary. And my world changed forever. I didn't know at that point that it was cancer, so I kind of entered that wait and observe phase that's so excruciating. And then by January, I was sitting with an oncologist hearing that it could be cancer, and I was immediately scheduled for surgery.
Wow. So now, can you tell me a little bit about the initial thoughts that ran through your head after you heard those words, you have ovarian cancer?
When I found out that it was cancer, it wasn't a callback for an office visit. I went into surgery not knowing what I would wake up to. Was this mass benign, malignant? Had it spread? So when I woke up from surgery, I saw my doctor and my husband, and both had smiles. And so I kind of thought, okay, maybe it's okay. And that's when I found out that it was cancer. It was a rare form of ovarian cancer, but and what I focused mostly on was they had caught it early, which for those aware of ovarian cancer know that doesn't happen often enough. And so we kind of turned our sights to recovery at that point. And it wasn't until a couple weeks later we found out that it was a higher grade malignancy than they originally thought. And now I would need to go through a pretty aggressive chemotherapy regimen called BEP, and that would give me the best chance of non-recurrence. So then we started focusing on treatment.
So you had the surgery followed by that aggressive chemotherapy regimen. What types of side effects did you experience?
Cancer treatment is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. I think for me, my mentality had shifted from kind of this victim mentality during the wait and observe phase where there's so many questions and it's so few answers. And then after the surgery, I found out it was cancer. I learned about the treatment and I think I reverted back to some of that competitive mentality. Okay. I've got a goal. I don't know exactly where I'm going to end up, but I know what the plan is, and I know what I can get up and do every day. And part of that was chemotherapy. And I went in with that mental attitude, but I will tell you, it was tough. The first week, I was back in the hospital. I couldn't keep down food or water. I went through 10 or 11 different nausea medications. Not one of them even fazed me. And so I think the nausea for me was maybe the biggest difficulty. But certainly losing my hair was tough. I think that's tough for all of us. It is, I think, to some degree, like losing your identity, because it's not just your hair. It's your eyelashes and your eyebrows. And I can remember looking in the mirror and seeing this very pale face looking back. And I had to constantly remind myself that this is not a symbol of my sickness. This is a symbol that I'm doing everything that I can to get and remain healthy. Other than that, I think the neuropathy in my hands, which I still tend to deal with today, chemo brain, which it's incredible. I mean, just not being able to find words at a certain time, and when my job is finding words, it's speaking in front of people, commentary and analysis, which means I have to have a great deal of information, and being able to capture that and put that out verbally at a moment's notice was a daunting task. and so it was interesting, but you know, I'll take it. I'm here. I get to get up each day, and so I'm just excited that that I'm at this place in my journey.
So you were also, like you were talking about, a young mom at the time of your diagnosis, and you risk losing your fertility due to treatment. So you selected to freeze your eggs. Yeah. So how did you come to make that decision?
When I first learned that I was going to have to go through chemotherapy, we went through a lot of questions. My doctor told me I was going to lose my hair. He went through a laundry list of things that I could think about, and one of them was fertility. We were expecting to have another child. We were kind of thinking, we were in the thought process of that. Our son was about 14 months old at the time, and we had already had those discussions. And so the idea that I might not be able to have more children due to the surgery and then the chemotherapy was a difficult thought. And so we looked at all of our options and we decided freezing eggs. We had kind of one opportunity. We had about a 3 to 4 week period before I needed to start chemo. And so he said, all right, you got one shot. So we went ahead and froze eggs and we thought, you know, we just want to have as many options on the board as possible. And then we'll just say our prayers and see what happens. And we were so fortunate that after surgery, after the chemo, and about a year and a half later, we found out that we were having a girl.
That's wonderful. So how important is it for women to know all of their options before beginning their cancer treatment?
I think it's so important. The more information we have as the patient, the more we feel good about those decisions. You can't make a decision without all the options. And I'm just a big advocate of getting as much information as you can on every topic. What's going to happen? What can I be a part of before, during, after? What are any of the other peripheral things that I need to think about now for my family, for family planning? All of those things, I think the more information we have, the more settled we are, the better we feel about our decisions. And I think the better decisions we're able to make.
Now, aside from the physical aspects of dealing with the disease, did you suffer from any emotional side effects?
I don't think you go through a cancer diagnosis without suffering from some emotional and psychological concerns, even setbacks at times. It is a very scary experience. And it tries you in many different ways. And I think for me, being such a young mom, as a young mom, you're already scared of everything. And so to add a cancer diagnosis on top of that and wonder if my son's going to have a mother. And then beyond that, if, and psychologically, you say when I get through this, what will be the ramifications for him? You know, what, if anything, will he remember? How can I make this a better experience for him? And certainly when you have children that are older, I guess in some ways his being so young was a blessing in disguise. He didn't really care that mommy's hairdo was different. But you think about those things, and I think you come face to face with your own mortality. And I really had never thought about that before. In all of the same things that I've done in my life, it's just not something I really dwelled on. And so for me, it was going back and just really relying on my faith and just saying, okay, I know that there's some things that I can handle, but there's a lot of things I can't. And so I'm just going to hand that to you, God, and I'm going to do what I can do and do my very best. And at some point, it just kind of clicked for me that I have to go out and I just have to live each day to the fullest, every single day, because you never know. But if you get up each day and you just try to do the best with it that you can, that's a really good start. Sorry.
Yeah, me too. So based on, we have I was reading a 2016 interview with you did with the American Cancer Society. You briefly mentioned that your mother, who is also a cancer survivor, can you share what type of cancer she had and if there was any advice that she gave you as you were dealing with your own?
My mother is a cancer survivor. She was diagnosed in 2008 with cervical cancer. And it was just really shocking, I think, to all of us in the family. And for me in particular, it was my first real glimpse into what someone faces before, during, and after a diagnosis that is so life-altering. And as a daughter, I mean, here's my mom. Mom's invincible. I mean, Mom's just supposed to be there. And at that point, it was just terrifying to think that we could lose her. Now, my mom is a fighter, and she just has always been such an inspiration and really my idol growing up. And now even she went through chemo, surgery, radiation, and about 3 years after her diagnosis, age of 67, she ran her first marathon. So she sets the bar pretty high in her family. And I was not running marathons after my treatment ended. In fact, I continued to be so nauseous. And I remember calling her. May 2nd, 2011 was the last day of my chemotherapy. And I guess somewhere in my mind, I thought, you know, I would walk out and the birds would sing and my hair would grow back and all would be right in my world. And realistically, I knew that wasn't going to be the case, but I thought it would be better than what I felt. 2 weeks later, I still just felt the same. I was so sick and I was so tired and nothing had changed. And I called her and she just said, look, let's talk about other things today. And I want you to call me back in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks. And then we'll talk about how you're feeling and what you're doing. You have to understand that this is not going to happen overnight. It is a process. and you just need to take it one day at a time. You did not win an Olympic medal in a day. It took you 10 years to get there. Just know that it's a process. And so we talked about other things, and 2 weeks later I called her and I said, "Mom, I don't feel great, but I feel better. I think it's going to be okay." And one of the things that I was really hoping after chemotherapy, of course I couldn't travel during chemo and I was so sick, but I really wanted to make it to my brother's wedding. He was getting married that June, and that was my goal, to get well enough and strong enough that I could travel to Oklahoma for his wedding. And on his wedding day, it was the first time that I woke up and I didn't think about cancer. And it was just an incredible moment, and it wasn't until later in the day that I really thought about some of the symptoms and thought, "Oh, I'm kind of tired," or something like that. But it was just one of those moments that I thought, okay, I'm getting there. It's gonna be a rough day.
Yeah, no, it is. My mother is a cancer survivor as well, breast cancer. She was diagnosed actually in 2005.
Oh, wow.
She's 15 years now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, almost 15 years. So, but
it's, well, yeah. Moms are, that's.
When mom is, it changes everything. Mm-hmm. All right. So, how has your perspective changed after cancer?
I learned a lot through the cancer experience. I'm still learning. I feel like I'm still on my journey. But I think the silver lining, and I'm one of those, I always try to find the silver lining. I try to find the blessing in every experience, even the most difficult ones. I try. And I think for me, the blessing that I've received is just the reminder to stop and smell the roses. I have lived my life so fast-paced. I was never one to dwell on difficulties, but I also wasn't one to dwell on successes. I finished the 1992 Olympics with 5 Olympic medals, and I went home and I was in the gym 3 days later because I just wanted to learn more skills. I was ready for the next thing. I didn't walk at my college graduation because I was ready for law school. I didn't walk there because I was ready to open my business. I've always been moving kind of at the speed of light, and I rarely allow myself those times to just stop and smell the roses and just kind of be proud of that moment and that achievement. And so I've started to do that, and I've started to feel okay about that. Whether it's, you know, just a small moment with my kids or a little win for me that day, I stop and I think about how that's a good thing and how it's added to my life, and I just try to enjoy every moment as much as possible.
So now you have your own brand, Shannon Miller Enterprises, with Shannon Miller Lifestyle, Health and Fitness for Women. So what do you hope to achieve with that?
I started my company in July of 2010, prior to my diagnosis, and it really was important to me to help women make their health a priority. And I had kind of gone through this revelation, I suppose, after I retired from gymnastics, from the Olympics, and I was in college, and I really wasn't taking care of myself the way I should. I wasn't working out 40 plus hours a week because I didn't have to go to the gym, and I had never been to a regular person's gym, never been on a treadmill, and I was still eating 6 full meals a day, and those two things don't work very well together. And I really didn't know how to take care of myself as a quote normal person. And so I started doing a lot of research on that, and you know, the thing that hit me the most going out and talking to other women was that we tend to feel guilty for taking time for ourselves, because it's time we might be taking away from our children and our jobs and in the house and in anything else, everything else. And so I thought, you know, I want my company to be devoted, yes, to nutrition and yes, to fitness and getting enough rest and recuperation and things like cancer awareness, diabetes, heart disease, all these things that affect us. But overall, I want us to help women not feel guilty about taking that time, because the fact is, it isn't a selfish act. Making our health a priority is a very selfless act. If we don't take time to take care of our health, we cannot be here for all of those that depend on us. So that's kind of the focus of my company, and it's just what I enjoy doing every day.
So now, despite how far science has come, where do you feel there's still a lack of resources when it comes to ovarian cancer?
Science has come so far with regard to all cancers, and ovarian cancer in particular. I mean, it's been incredible, the medical breakthroughs that are happening every day. But there's always a need for more. More funding for research is so critical, and I'm just a big advocate of getting the research, because that's what's going to give us better treatments. We need a test or a scan that diagnoses ovarian cancer earlier, at its earliest possible stage. That's what we want. And yes, of course we want a cure. I mean, that's the goal. But at the same time, there are women that have been diagnosed today that need help. They need help with treatments, better treatments. They need help with quality of life during treatment and post-treatment. And so those are all the things that I think we can get up and we can continue to work on every day.
So now, lastly, do you have a favorite motto or a quote that you like to live by?
Oh, okay, hold on. I'm going to have to think about this for a second.
It's hard to narrow it down, right?
Yeah. I think if I had to choose a motto to live by, I'm not sure if I have a specific motto, but I think what it would be is just go out and do my best every day. It's something that was instilled in me by my parents from a very early age. They didn't care if I won a meet or lost or how my grades were, other than if I tried my best. Did you get it 100%? That's all that mattered. And so I think if we go out and give it 100% every day, no matter what it is, whether it's doing dishes or speaking in front of 1,000 people, whatever that is, do your best, give it 100%, and you can always be happy with that.
Join us next week when we hear from all three of this year's ovarian cancer heroes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.